This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, you'll hear about a speech policing sheriff. Also hear about Speaker Strauss obstructing education reform on his way out the door. We'll also have on a guest from Gray 2K to hear about the pernicious influence of the greyhound racing industry in Texas. And we'll close with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan on the dreaded fake endorsement. Welcome back this week to Texas Scorecard Radio, coming to you from the 1836 studios. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. We'll get started quick this week in the Around Texas segment. Get started with one of my own articles, a breaking developing story involving Tarrant County Sheriff Bill Wayborn. It fits into a narrative that is going on in this state of people in politics, in power, using their power through the criminal justice system to try to criminalize speech that they don't like. This is something that came out last week. Late in the week, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and the Texas Tribune launched stories attacking candidate Beau French for what they said was a scandalous crime, the scandalous crime of criticizing Tarrant County Sheriff Bill Wayborn when Wayborn was running for his initial run for office to be sheriff. Allegedly in this story, French formed a page, it's a satirical page, Thief Bill Wayborn, and it talked about these allegations that Wayborn had mishandled city funds, misused city resources back when he was the chief of police, not the thief of police, but the chief of police in Dow-Worthington Gardens, a small city in Tarrant County. As we looked at the article and looked at the reality of the situation, it turns out that Wayborn really overreacted, had a serious miscalculation of judgment as to this page that was criticizing his candidacy. Instead of giving out the facts or the facts as he saw them or addressing these things on point, he went to a constable who he had a relationship with, judges who he had a relationship with, and got them to issue a search warrant and sent that to Facebook unmask the identity of this anonymous page, the Thief Bill Wayborn page. Wayborn is out saying that this is online impersonation, a violation of the law, but the reality is everybody recognizes this is protected by the First Amendment. People have a right to criticize elected officials. They have a right to criticize candidates. And when those candidates don't like it, they don't have a right to go out and abuse the legal process and try and make something that's not a crime into a crime. It's a real problem in this state. So I'd encourage listeners, go to texasscorecard.com. I've got an article up there. Your loyal and humble host writing there about the situation with Wayborn. And I think it's something that I'll continue to cover. There are more developments in the works and something that listeners ought to go check out. In this week's Under the Dome segment, we've got Kerry Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. You've got a new story up about outgoing House Speaker Joe Strauss kind of gumming up the works on education reform on his way out the door. Tell us about it.
That's right, Tony. House Speaker Joe Strauss, who announced earlier this year that he would not be seeking re-election, would not be returning to the Texas House and teeing off a contested race for the Speaker of the Texas House, taking a shot at Governor Greg Abbott and school choice reform, school finance reform, on his way out the door by appointing liberal Republicans and enemies of public education reform to a blue ribbon commission intended to study the issue over the interim before the Texas legislature convenes in 2019.
Yeah, this was one of the issues that Governor Greg Abbott made a feature of his special session agenda. And it didn't get as much attention as some of the others, but it was a major part of the agenda nonetheless. He's calling for a blue ribbon panel to look at how we finance schools and to look at opportunities to reform and improve education. In fact, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick came out early in the week and said, hey, you know, Strauss hasn't made his appointments. If he's really serious about this, he should make appointments. He immediately reacts, and he puts some guys who are just straight up opposed to this sort of thing on the commission.
Well, it wasn't just that he had to make appointments, it's that he missed a crucial deadline. I mean, the law is clear. It required him to make appointments by a deadline. He missed it. And instead, he didn't do anything until Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick called him out, and then he appointed enemies of public education reform to the commission. He appointed Public Education Chairman Dan Huberty, Liberal Republican from Kingwood, Ken King, another Liberal Republican from the Panhandle, and then a CFO with Austin ISD, which is far out of touch with mainstream Texas voters.
Yeah. In fact, Huberty was, as education chair, a huge opponent to almost any kind of change to the status quo in education. Ironically, in this case, he actually killed the bill on this public school financing blue ribbon panel. There was a bill during the regular session. There were 5 days left in the session. He postponed it for consideration for 28 days. So
that's absolutely right, Tony. And it caused the necessity for Governor Greg Abbott to add it to the call, caused a necessity for State Representative Phil King of Weatherford to carry it during the special session, and so that it got passed. Very interesting. House Speaker Joe Strauss did not appoint Phil King to the committee to study this issue, even though he carried the bill.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on the commission, but I think, you know, the future's clear. It's probably going to be a lot of obstructionism out of the House again.
That's absolutely correct, Tony.
After the break, Christine Dorchak will tell us about the harm that the greyhound racing industry in Texas does not only to greyhounds, but also to taxpayers.
Hey, this is Michael Sullivan, the president of Empower Texans. I'll be back a little later in the program with a commentary, but I wanted to grab the mic from Tony so I could thank him for leading the Texas Scorecard Radio Project. Tony does the work you hear. What you don't hear is the great team supporting him and doing a lot of heavy lifting behind the scenes. With operations in Austin, the Metroplex, East Texas, Houston, the Rio Grande Valley, and in West Texas, our Empower Texans team stands ready to help you where you live and work. None of this would be possible, though, without the generous support of donors from around the Lone Star State who make monthly donations to our work. I hope you'll take a moment and visit EmpowerTexans.com and make a contribution to our efforts of providing Texans with the tools they need to hold politicians accountable. Through our print, electronic, and radio Texas Scorecard news service, we want to help folks cut through the political clutter. As we like to say, someone's always keeping score. We just think it ought to be the taxpayers. As citizens in this great republic, we have to be paying attention to everything from the schoolhouse to the courthouse to the White House. Last thing, we'd love to be connected with you on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I think you'll enjoy interacting with new friends from around the state. So on behalf of everyone at Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard, I hope you and yours have a Merry Christmas season, Happy Holidays, and a great 2018.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome on the program this week Christine Dorchak with Grey2K Worldwide, a greyhound protection organization. And it's you may be asking, why is a show that's interested in Texas government talking to an international greyhound protection organization? It's because of the power and influence the greyhound tracks and the greyhound racing industry has in the state of Texas. So thank you, Christine, for coming on. Tell listeners a little bit about your organization.
Well, we're a nonprofit organization, and we are shedding a light on the cruelty and corruption of greyhound racing wherever it exists. And certainly the problem is alive and well in Texas. And that's why we've been monitoring the situation in Texas for several years. And we're concerned about the state of greyhound racing now, the number of dogs that are dying, and the suffering that this business is causing to the dogs. We're also concerned about the economic losses of greyhound racing on the taxpayers. So there's so many reasons to fight for the greyhounds and to abolish dog racing in the state of Texas.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting issue where people who care about, you know, I've been around greyhounds. I've had friends who've had great, you know, pet greyhounds. Love these animals. They're beautiful animals, and people have a love for these animals. And that's kind of one set of people. And then there's other people. And it's not mutually exclusive, who are looking at the state government and going, wait a second, these guys are having some very seedy impact on the taxpayer and on just government in general. But let's talk a little bit about the Texas situation. So yeah. Tell us about the tracks that exist here, how long they've been around, kind of what the situation is in Texas with the racing industry.
Well, you know, greyhound racing really hasn't been around that long in Texas, relatively speaking. Greyhound racing was first legalized in this country in 1931 as a way to raise revenues during Depression-era times, very depressed economic times for states. They welcomed new forms of revenue. Texas did not get into that game until 1986, and the first tracks opened beginning in 1987. And at one time, there were three tracks in the state, and that was Corpus Christi, that was Valley Racetrack, and Gulf Greyhound Park. So certainly, Texas didn't jump right into dog racing, but it's in it now, and as a result, many dogs are suffering, and the taxpayers are footing the bill for this cruel and dying industry. Every track that has opened has closed for economic reasons. For instance, Gulf Greyhound Park, which was the last track to run a full schedule, held its last race in December 2015. It had suffered a 59% decline in attendance, so of course it had to close. Another track, Corpus Christi, which closed in 2007, it had lost $3.5 million that last year. Nobody is interested in watching dogs run around in circles. That's a fact.
Yeah.
Fact in Texas, and it's a fact nationwide, where we're seeing the same decline in this old-fashioned form of gambling.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit about how these tracks are hanging on in terms of being legal entities, seeking ways to get slot machines, other kinds of revenue.
Yeah.
We can talk about that in a minute, but I did want to touch, you know, talking to you as we've gotten to know each other over the last few years in these conflicts that have gone on in Texas, I've learned a lot about the cruelty of greyhound racing. And I just kind of wanted, maybe for listeners who don't have a familiarity with the cruelty involved, kind of some of the differences. It's not, you know, little horse racing. You know, it's a much different thing from a moral standpoint. And so I'd love to hear you explain that for listeners who maybe just don't really know anything about dog racing.
Well, you know, greyhounds, there are lots of dogs bred in each litter. So a horse, you might have one or two foals. Greyhounds could be six, as many as 12 puppies in a litter. And some of those are going to be winners. Some of those are going to be losers. Many dogs that are born on the private breeding farms, they never make it off the farm. So from the very beginning, there's an underbelly of cruelty to the dog racing business. It's very cutthroat. So the dogs that do go on to train to race then have to deal with a standard of care that is very poor. They are kept confined for as many as 23 hours a day in small stacked cages. They are fed a diet based on raw 4D meat. And 4D is the USDA classification for downer meat. It's the meat of down, dying, disabled, and dead livestock. It's full of pathogens like E. coli, Salmonella. This is what greyhounds are fed. Why? Because this is an industry that can't afford to do better. So this is a standard across the industry. The dogs, when they are let out to race several times a month, which a lot of people might not understand, they're not running every day. They're running every few days, several times a month, tops. And it's a 30-second race, and they go back in the cage.
Mm-hmm.
They face the risk of serious injury. For instance, at the last a 36-day race meet at Valley Racetrack. At this time last year, two dogs died on December 28th and December 29th. One dog broke his foot and was euthanized, so that's a worthless dog for running, so that dog had to go. Another dog broke her neck, and the injury report doesn't even say broke neck. It says cardiorespiratory incident. So it's a cover-up to try and make dog racing seem less cruel than it is. But dogs are paying with their lives, and this is going to keep happening as long as greyhound racing continues.
Yeah, and, you know, I know there was an occasion a while back with Gulf Greyhound, you know, kind of on the Gulf Highway between Houston and Galveston there, where the track was so uneven, you were having an unusual amount of these incidents with broken legs and these sorts of things, just because the track's in such disrepair.
Yeah, one in five injuries in Texas is a broken leg, which is often a death sentence for a greyhound, renders the dog useless as a racer. In fact, Texas holds the record nationwide for the greatest number of reported injuries, 2,700 injuries since 2008, and this is even in view of one track after another closing and no more racing at those tracks. Gulf Greyhound Park is responsible for the overwhelming majority of these injuries. And golf is about to, in a few days from now, run another short season. So we are bracing ourselves for the bad news about to come.
Yeah, you know, so I kind of got interested in this issue originally because of the connection. You know, obviously, in my work, I follow a lot of the things that go on with the Texas House of Representatives. Speaker Joe Strauss, infamous in his family's involvement with Retama Park, the horse track on the north side of San Antonio. But his direct connection to Gulf Greyhound, and there are other indirect connections, but his political consultant, his kind of political guru, a guy named Gordon Johnson, is a part owner and the chief lobbyist for, or was the chief lobbyist for, Gulf Greyhound. And so it really is mind-blowing that these people engaged in this very nasty industry have just a tremendous amount of political clout.
Absolutely.
In Texas, essentially running a portion of Texas government for their own benefit.
You know, it's no surprise to see this mixture of people in government and people who actually have interests in dog racing. The regulated are controlling the regulators in so many different ways. For instance, in 2011, you know, Gulf Greyhound Park went to Texas Racing Association and said, "Hey, we don't want so many drug tests." So what happens? Very quietly, the Texas Racing Commission reduces the number of drug tests done on racing greyhounds by 30%, and by 2012, it decides it's no longer going to be reporting drug-positive information to the public. So it's a complete lockdown and cover-up on the number of dogs that are turning up drug-positive in Texas. We know that from other sources that 74 dogs have turned up drug-positive since 2008. And the majority of the drug positives have been for an anesthetic called Procaine. So it seems to me, I'm no doctor, but it seems to me this means that dogs that are injured and in pain are being forced to run.
Wow, that's horrifying. So let's talk a little bit about the economic situation for these tracks. So we've talked a little bit about the fact that people are not attending their losing revenue. They're money losers, just period. From a greyhound racing perspective, they're money losers. But the owners are holding on in the hopes of one day getting policy changed in the state to put in place slot machines at the racetracks, which would be this huge bonanza. And so they run these short seasons. They do these things to kind of keep up the appearance of being a greyhound racing track, even though they're closed most of the year, in order to maintain a license and do that. I wanted to talk a little bit. The first kind of time I really dove into this was, you speak about the regulators, you know, being taken over. The Texas Racing Commission going out and trying to unilaterally change the rules to put in place something called instant racing, historical racing, which was slot machines at these tracks, completely circumventing the legislative process.
That's right. The Texas Racing Racing Commission was trying to do another favor for the racetracks. And the racetracks had been holding on for years, giving up, but on terms of live racing in 2007, 2009, and then in 2015, one after the other. But they were holding on to their licenses, calling themselves inactive racetracks. And as inactive racetracks, they still had a foot in the water, so they could make demands on the Racing Commission. Mm-hmm. And the Racing Commission needs them to keep paying their license fees because the Racing Commission needs revenue. Time and time again, the Racing Commission has cried poor and said, we're going to go dark because we don't have enough money to keep ourselves afloat. Even back in 2009, the then head of the Texas Racing Commission said, this is the end of the end. That was in 2009, but somehow or another, they've been able to push the cart down the road. They're doing favors for the dog tracks, and in return, the dog tracks are, you know, giving them cover. It's a very unsavory relationship. So when the racetracks said, look, we're not making it. Nobody's coming to watch live races. We want to keep our simulcasting. So let us keep our licenses so we can keep offering simulcasting. People go to dog tracks to bet on horse races taking place elsewhere. That's the real joke of this. People go to dog tracks to bet on horses. Wow. But that's how they stay open. That's how Gulf Greyhound Park was maintaining itself for so long. Well, now they said, well, we want more. This isn't enough. We want slot machines. So the Racing Commission approved a rule that allowed racetracks to have slot machines. They called them historic racing machines, which, you know, they were slot machines. I looked at the patents myself.
Right.
They have the same kind of components as a slot machine.
Yeah, one of them, it was called Yukon Willie's Gold Rush, and a win, place, or show was signified by a pickaxe, an ore cart, a gold nugget, you know. So, I think
was one, you know, way that the Racing Commission tried to help out. But lawmakers got in the way and said, we didn't approve this, and you're going to repeal that rule, which they did.
Yeah,
but
it was strong leadership from the Senate doing that.
The Commission has found another way to help them and give them access to a $2 to $3 million escrow pool. And that's why they have reopened with this fig leaf of 36 days of racing each one taking 36 days of racing a year. So last year it was Valley Racetrack. This year it's going to be Gulf Greyhound Park beginning in a few days. And with that fig leaf in place, they can keep offering simulcasting. And guess what? They can keep trying to get their slot machines.
Wow. It to me, the answer, it's going to continue to be a cesspool of corruption and cruelty to the animals and wastes of taxpayer dollars. Unless we just we've got to shut these tracks down. That's the answer.
That's certainly our goal, to prohibit dog racing in the United States. And taxpayers should be asking, why are you giving away $2 to $3 million to dog track folks instead of either retaining the money or putting it into a good program that we want to be funded? Instead, $2 to $3 million is made available to these three former racetracks so that they can operate as basically OTBs for all intents and purposes,
right,
and keep vying for slot machines in the future. That's the name of the game. They want to grab the brass ring of slot machines, and dog racing is just a fig leaf, just a platform they're using to try and keep their position. Unfortunately, many, many dogs are suffering as a result.
Right. Real quickly, tell us where people can learn more about your organization.
Go to grade2kusa.org, and if you look under About Dog Racing, we have a whole page on Texas, in fact, on every state with dog racing, which there are six remaining. And if you want to take it in action, what you can do is we have a Take Action page, and you can sign a petition to the governor of Texas and to every governor of a racing state asking that governor take a position against greyhound racing.
Well, thank you for your work, Christine. I thank you for being vigilant on this. This is going to continue to go until this ends. And so I look forward to having you back on. We'll have to have you on to talk more about some of these specific breaking news. But thank you for your work.
Thank you so much for having me on, Tony. Happy holidays.
Yes. Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
You've heard about fake news. In this week's commentary, Michael Quinn Sullivan warns us about fake endorsements.
It's easy to think that all politicians are liars, and it's also unfair. But sometimes, those people running for office will color so far outside the lines that it demonstrates a fundamental lack of respect for voters. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. One signal voters and candidates rely upon in the context of elections is the third-party validation of endorsements. Those endorsements can range from big-name organizations and political celebrities to hometown heroes and workaday activists. Endorsements are a sort of shorthand for voters. An endorsement communicates the idea that if you like the endorser, then the endorsee must be okay too. For this reason, candidates have been known to overstate their endorsements, to inflate their endorsements, and even lie about their endorsements. We saw that happen recently in the race for the Texas Land Commissioner. It's not the sexiest position on the ballot, overseeing an agency charged with maintaining dusty records and managing tens of thousands of acres of state land, among other things. Yes, the General Land Office of Texas oversees the permanent school fund that provides billions of dollars into higher education, and it oversees low-interest home loans to Texas veterans. The current commissioner is George P. Bush, who was first elected to the office nearly 4 years ago with little serious opposition. The grandson and nephew of two presidents and the son of a former governor of Florida, Bush has stayed mostly out of the spotlight. That is, until he took over management of the Alamo under the terms of legislation passed before he took office. We can set aside the arguments and criticisms there, but suffice it to say that there's a segment of the Republican base that's furious with his handling of the matter. Right or wrong, it is what it is. And so Bush faces three opponents in the March primary, including former Land Commissioner Jerry Patterson. But it's another challenger who I'll discuss today in the context of endorsements, a completely unknown candidate named Rick Range, a self-described expert on the history of the Alamo, has been running for months against Bush. He recently implied that he's been endorsed by a grassroots coalition that doesn't offer endorsements. That earned him a stern rebuke from the coalition's organizer. Then he sent an email in which he claimed a series of memberships and titles and the endorsement of Texas Right to Life, the largest, oldest, and most respected state-level pro-life organization in the nation. Granted, the land commissioner doesn't have much to do with life issues, but the endorsement carries a great deal of weight with a great many voters. The problem? Range wasn't endorsed by them. They haven't endorsed anyone in the race yet. When I reached out to Range, he first told me it was a misprint, that it was supposed to be National Right to Life. But sound the buzzer here, National Right to Life has endorsed him either. The Washington, D.C.-based group does endorse in state-level contests only federal elections. That job it leaves to its Lone Star State affiliate, Texas Right to Life. Then he claimed that he had meant that he was actually endorsed by the former president of a statewide group, which is a National Right to Life group. It turns out that, yes, he was endorsed by that individual, but not the organization. Bottom line, he colored so far outside the lines of strict truth-telling to have strayed in the territory of telling lies. When candidates claim endorsements that aren't their own, either innocently or maliciously, it harms their credibility and sadly leads people to the not unreasonable conclusion that no one running for office can be trusted. There are a lot of good-willed men and women with honest intentions who seek office. Their politics and philosophies won't match with every voter, but they and those who endorse them deserve to not have the validity of their campaigns undermined by people who would shade the truth. But it's a good lesson for voters. Trust, but verify. Even if it's a candidate you like, check out their claimed endorsements. If they're misrepresenting the truth there, just imagine how horrible they would be in office. Voters deserve better. With today's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's it for this week. Quick programming note for those of you who catch the show on the podcast channel, the team and I will be taking a break between Christmas and New Year's, so the next program will be in January. For those of you who listen on the radio, go check out the podcast channel. You're missing programs unless you're tuning in every week, which is great. For those of you who listen on the radio, I'll be actually playing a great interview that I did with Tracy Marshall with Transparency Texas, making kind of dollars and cents of dollars and cents in Texas politics. Until then and until the new year, Merry Christmas and thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.